Okay. So, first of all, I would like to thank the organizers for giving me opportunity to give a talk at this conference and here there are many interesting talks, and here are some summary which I learned at this conference. But if you have hyperbolic equilibrium point, when it can cause instabilities in small perturbations of integrable Hamiltonian systems. And so basically my talk is going to be also illustration of this point, but I will illustrate on very simple example of one degree of freedom Hamiltonian, one degree of freedom systems. And then, because it is not very interesting to consider a Hamiltonian perturbation of one degree of freedom Hamiltonian systems, we want to consider dissipative perturbations and see how this instability, what kind of effect this instability may have on the system. So let me first review some basic examples of instability. So here we can see we can start with a very simple one-dimensional system, a particle moving in potential on the line. So if we assume that potential has only one minimum, then the without friction, the phase portrait is going to be just consisting of periodic orbits. And then if we introduce a small friction, then the energy is going to decay due to friction, and so the particle is going to fall down to the equilibrium point. So this is a very simple model. And in fact, also using averaging, we can basically describe how this approach of energy to zero happens. So basically, the decay of energy during one period is proportional to the area of inside the energy level. So this is all fact which we learn in the introductory course of differential equations. And so here there is a slightly more complicated problem. So here we have a potential with two minima, and then the question which we can ask, so again we know that energy is going to decay due to friction, and then we want to ask which of the minima we are going to converge to. So we know from invariant manifold theorem it's not going to be the probability to that we approach to one stable minimum is equal to zero, and so this is maybe going to be either this first minimum or the second minimum. And we know from experience that this may be not very easy to predict the answer, because very small perturbations in initial conditions can lead, or if we don't know very precisely the system at hand, then we do not know to which minimum the ball is going to converge, and then it makes sense to consider this as a random event. So for example, here if we have 37 minimum on the circle and there is a symmetry, when it's natural to say this is just a random event, the probability to end up near each minimum is 1 over 37. So this is basically the common sense. And now we need to, if we want to make mathematical definition, so okay, here is the same picture now in the phase plane. With two minima, we have the points which converge to the first minimum consist of number of gray strips, and then the points which converge to the second minimum converge to is some number of white strips, and then the white and gray strips cover the plane densely, where difference between the width of a strip is of order epsilon, the order of perturbation. So this is why order of epsilon changes in initial conditions lead to the change, may lead to a change of answer. And so we want, it makes sense to consider this as a random event. And so we need to define, so from a mathematical point of view, we need to define what does it mean randomness. So there are several possibilities. I just mentioned two of these. So one is more in the classical framework of dynamics. We just consider random initial conditions. So in this definition, we first take a ball of small radius delta, and suppose that we know initial condition after this precision delta, and then we can, so for fixed epsilon in delta, we have some, we can consider this random event, the probability that the ball is going to converge to the first minimum, and we compute the probability as epsilon goes to zero of this event, and then we take the limit delta goes to zero. So this is just a definition using random initial conditions. So in this case, we assume that we don't know initial condition precisely. Another possible regularization is to consider a small noise. So here we consider our dynamical system, and then we so we have epsilon perturbation, and then we add small noise. So here we have delta square root of epsilon. Why we have square root of epsilon? Because here this white noise has zero mean, and so this is just L2 norm, which is important, and L2 norm is delta square times epsilon. So this if delta, so if delta is small, then this noise is small comparing to the size of perturbation, and again this is a random event, and we can compute the limit as epsilon goes to zero, and then limit as delta goes to zero. And so this is a part of this definition, but here to consider either a ball of radius delta or consider the white noise, we need to introduce some Riemannian metrics, so there is some kind of arbitrary choice involved in this problem. And then to make this definition, we say that this definition makes sense, then we should see that this definition does not depend on the arbitrariness which we have in this choice. And so here the second definition is more kind of in line of viscosity type regularization of partial differential equations. So this is basically what we do. We consider equation for density, and we consider kind of viscosity. We introduce small viscosity to this problem. And so here the advantage of this second approach is that we can use results from the theory of partial differential equations, and we will see that we will in fact use some results which were proved a few months ago to analyze some small modification of this problem which I consider here. But in this particular setting we see that both so there are many other definitions. So second definition says that we have some small noise which is changing with time. There are some other possibilities to make some other definitions. But basically, in this example, at least these two definitions and many other, they lead to the same answer, that the probability to, so this, we just need to compare the width of these strips, which are given by separatrix integrals, and so with separatrix integrals we know are given by this area. So the answer is proportional to the area which is in of the separatrix contour. So this is the answer which we get. So this was a result of Nystad in the first case, and in fact it was just a very special case of his result, and this was for the second regularization, this was this formula was proven by Breen and Friedlin. So now the next question which we can ask, suppose we have multiple potential and we pass several saddles, and then we want to see if multiple separatrix passages are independent or not. And so to state the answer, we need to introduce this graph. So this basically here this system, Hamiltonian system, the small perturbation of Hamiltonian systems is just a slow fast system. And what is the slow variable? Slow variable is naturally, we know that energy is slow variable, but also it's, if we have the energy level is not too big, then it is has several components, so it is natural to regard the number of components as an additional, as also a part of a slow. So it's natural to consider the graph was points are connected components of energy level. So if we have high energy when we have just one component, once we pass this level, then we have a bifurcation, we have two components, and then so all together we can have at some level we can have here three components and so on. So at some level we can have four components, and then it's big. So this is the graph which we have, and suppose we want to start somewhere here on this graph, and then we want to go here. So we have to pass the first separatrix and the second one, and we can ask, and then we consider the small dissipative perturbation, and we assume that the average vector field allows us to go from here to here and from here to here, and we want to ask, is the probability to go from here to here is equal to probability to choose a left so we choose left branch here and left branch here, and the answer is if we consider small noise regularization, the answer is yes. If we consider initial condition renormalization, when it is regularization, when it is sometimes yes and sometimes no, for example, in the case of friction, the answer will be yes, but in general, it may be, sometimes it can be no. So just to understand this, we can consider the same graph as we have before. And so suppose that the average vector field look like this, then we have here the direction of the average vector field is like this, then the answer is going to be yes for initial condition regularization, because all points which start in some small ball here, we consider a small ball in on this branch, so some small balls here, so all points which start here, we will fill all points in this ball, because there is no other points which come, but if we have a vector field here is pointing like this, then the answer is not necessarily events may be dependent, because here is the picture, so we have the strips corresponding to the second passage and the strips which correspond to the first passage, and these strips both have width epsilon, and they need not, and if we are not very precisely aligned, then the probability of taking two passages will not be equal to the product of the probability. So in general, we may have, for initial condition regularization, these passages are not always independent, and so at least this indicates that this small noise regularization is easier to handle than the initial conditions regularization, and this is because here randomness change, we always have additional randomness, whereas in the first example, we just fixed our randomness and we don't have any extra randomness coming in. So for this reason, in this talk, we will concentrate on this small noise regularization. Here, just restatement of the theorem. So if of the result of the previous slide, so this is theorem of Breen-Freleng, saying that if we rescale time by epsilon, so we consider time on which slow variables change with unit speed, then the motion of a slow component converges to a Markov process, such that the motion along the edges is deterministic and given by averaging principle, and once the process comes to the vertex, it immediately chooses the new edge, and next edge is chosen with probability which is given by some separatrix integral. So this is basically the restatement of the fact that these passages are independent, because in this Markov process, the motion along the edges is deterministic, only randomness coming when we have to pass across the separatrix. And so here, the statement that the limiting process is Markov is basically the restatement of the fact that these are independent events to go here, to the left, and go here. So now we have several natural questions related to this statement. So this result, so the first question is, what is a limiting process for random initial condition regularization? So we know that sometimes it can, so sometimes it's the same process, like in this case. In other case, this process is not Markov process or limiting process, but in fact it's some process which is not Markov, but it has some, still one can probably write down the properties of this process. So this is the first question, which is quite natural, but today I will concentrate on the second question. And so you see I'm a little bit cheating here, but so the question is, what happens if we consider, so here the result is varied for Hamiltonian system on the plane or on the compact surface. So here we consider the compact surface, and we want to consider now not Hamiltonian flows, but area preserving flows. So here, maybe for this conference is not a good thing to consider, but is not very much cheating because this system is still Hamiltonian if we consider it's on the universal cover. So we just the Hamiltonian is multivariate. So this is kind of a very small difference. And so the question which we want to ask, what would be the effect of allowing more multivariate Hamiltonian instead of considering single-valued Hamiltonian? And we see that we can generalize this theorem to the setting. So to present this generalization, what I want to do is I need to recall some facts about the flaws on surfaces. So we make, in fact, two assumptions about our flaw. In fact, this first assumption also I think I need to make in the first theorem, because otherwise this Mielnikov integral may diverge. So equilibrium points are non-degenerate, which is an assumption, in fact, which I forgot to mention also before. And this assumption, there is no saddle connection, is a new assumption we want. We don't want to have two critical points on the same level set. So these are two assumptions. And if now what would be the graph which we consider? So now we don't have Hamiltonian, but we want to consider the graph whose points will be possible limit sets of our system. So if Z is a point of area preserving flow on the surface, then there are three kind of possible limit sets. It can be either equilibrium point, it can be periodic orbit, or so this is both possibilities are for also holds for Hamiltonian. And the only new thing here would be it can be with a large component, it can be suspension flow of the interval exchange transformation. So this is basically so here is the picture on the torus. And so this is the first fact. We have three possible types of omega limit sets. And the second fact which we need is that now periodic component, so we assume so critical points are not degenerate, there are finitely many critical points, there can be finitely many components of positive measure, and then we have also periodic, infinitely many periodic orbits, but these periodic orbits can be organized into components, and each component is either cylinder, or we can take cylinder and glue with circle or all these points together to make a point, equilibrium point. We can do the same to the other end of cylinder when we get a sphere, or we can glue with circle to the circle, and then we get a torus. So there are four possibilities. But sphere and the torus are not very interesting, because if we have a sphere, then the graph is going to be like this. And this is basically this motion, and this graph is described by the averaging principle. If we have a torus, then we have something like this. So in this case, we don't have any components of positive measure. So this basically the theory is as before. So interesting case when each periodic component is either disk or the cylinder. And then now, so we can consider this graph. And so here are some examples. This is a genus 2 surface, and it has two periodic components, two ergodic components, and we have three periodic components. Edges correspond to periodic components, and then we have two equilibrium points. And this graph here is obtained by surgery, so we can cut out of this circle, and then we can glue the second copy of the same surface here when we have four ergodic components, and then we can have a cycle like this. Or this is example when we start on the torus. This is the example which we started when the graph is like this. And for example, what we can do, we take this little circle, cut off this little circle, and we can glue these two pans together. So with two legs together, we get a graph like this, or we can glue with two copies and glue them together, we get a graph like this. So in principle, a graph can, for say, Hamiltonian system on the plane, we have a tree, but here the graphs may be slightly more complicated. We may have circles, we can have edges which they can have connections. So this is kind of a little bit more complicated graph. And so now the theorem, so we consider this system, z dot is equal to v, so v is area pressure, and then we consider small dissipating perturbation, so we introduce this kind of separatrix integrals, and then the result is the same, so we have a limiting where if we consider small noise regularization, then the limiting process is the Markov process, so again the motion along the edges is deterministic, and the next edge is chosen with the probability which is proportional to this separatrix integral. So if this integral is negative and we don't, this means that the picture is like this. The vector field is on this edge is pointing toward this vertex, so we cannot go inside this edge. So we choose all edges where this integral is, we consider all edges where the integral is positive, and we choose if there are two of them. If there are no such edges, then we just get stuck inside the periodic point, inside this component. If there is one edge, we choose this edge. If there are two edges, then we choose the first of them with probability R1 over R1 plus R2. So this is basically the third. Okay? So this is basically the same result as before. And so what is new? That if we come to the component of positive measure, then we don't leave it immediately, but we stay for the random time. So this time has exponential distribution with parameter which is given sum over all k such that rk is positive of this component. So the parameter is for exponential distribution, parameter is inverse of mean stay length. So if the area is large, when we tend to stay long inside this component, and if this flux of the vector field B along through the separatrix is small, then we also tend to stay longer. But this is the exponential time, and the mean free path is given by 1 over sum of this. So this is basically the, and so if area of E is 0, then this means that with lambda is equal to infinity, so which means that we immediately leave the corresponding corresponding vertex. So this is basically again in accordance to the previous result. So this is the new phenomena which appears instead of Hamiltonian systems, we consider locally Hamiltonian systems, so that we can stay at the vertices for a positive amount of time. So this is kind of new thing, and in fact, the equation which is natural to ask: what happens for initial if we consider regularization of random with respect to random initial conditions? So, for example, if we have just the torus rotation on the torus, we say we have epsilon neighborhood of separatrix, when the time to, so we have rotation, we want this rotation to go inside the small neighborhood of a given point. So under some conditions, it's known that this is going to be, have exponential distribution if rotation number is chosen at random. So in principle, one under certain modifications, one should expect the same, some similar result to be valid also for regularizations by initial conditions, but in principle, it's not, it seems to be more difficult. And also here in the previous, in our theorem, when we consider small noise regularization, then there are not much assumption. We just assume that there are no saddle connections, but so just in case of a torus, for example, we say that a rotation number is irrational. There is no other assumptions on rotation number. But if we want to have this thing, maybe we need some stronger assumptions. I don't know. In principle, it may be with some stronger assumption. Maybe in general, one may have counterexamples. But in any case, this is kind of seems to be a natural equation to consider. And one, it's under some circumstances, one can expect the similar phenomena happens also in this case, but it seems to be more difficult to do. And so just as a consequence of this, we can, if we consider this system, say graph like this, then we can have intermittent behavior. So this, if the graph is, say, like this, Say for example the motion is like this, then what happens when we go to this point, when we sit here for the random time, when we deterministically move to the next one, sit here for the random time, then again deterministically move here and so on, and basically what happens with motion size deterministic, so basically we have a finite state Markov process after this trivial modification, where the transitions are not immediate but they take some time, but otherwise we just have finite state Markov process which is embedded into this kind. So what we can expect if this answer here is that in some under quite general circumstances, for example this answer, the limiting process is the same, when we start with deterministic flow of surf on the surface, we add small dissipative perturbation, and then the limiting process is just Markov process on the finite state. So I think also Torian, in his talk, he gave some example of a similar phenomenon when you can have just 1.5 degree of freedom and you have the same kind of Markov transitions between several states. So in his, but in his talk, the mechanism was different. It was passages through resonances, and so here we have slightly different mechanism. Here is just because of this presence of a large ergodic component, it can lead to this kind of effects. So this is kind of interesting that this just purely deterministic systems, after small perturbations, we can lead to Markov processes. So this is kind of a result. So this was our main result, saying that once we consider a regularization of this problem, just we have Z dot is a Hamiltonian part plus small dissipative part, then we can have a Markov process as a limiting process, and then this result follows from this more general result. So we can consider this Markov process. So this Markov process again consists of, so here we just rescale time by the, so that slow component change with unit speed, so we have a 1 over epsilon motion along the trajectories of the vector field, and when we add some noise, and then we say, we claim that as epsilon goes to zero, the motion of slow component converges on to a Markov process, and this Markov process has a generator which can be written explicitly, and so basically the motion of the edges is some diffusion process with generator given by classical averaging principle, and when you think that this process spends positive amount of time on inside each of the vertices. So what is yeah, so this is just here we assume that we add non-degenerate noise, so this is not, we don't want it. Epsilon goes to zero when we have convergence to, okay, sorry, yeah, thank you. So when the motion small component converges to a Markov process, okay, and so we will explain. So the generator inside the edges is kind of given by classical again averaging theory. So the difference with this theorem and our theorem. So here we have a generator L epsilon one, so one over epsilon V gradient, and then plus L. And our theorem was saying that if we put delta, so and we put some delta, so this was our original problem. So this theorem says that for fixed delta, as epsilon goes to zero, we have a convergence. And then we need to analyze the motion, what happens when delta with limiting Markov process when delta goes to zero. And then it is quite easy because already we know from the previous work, maybe even by Hasminski, but this is going to be deterministic when motion inside the edge. And so now we have a Markov process, and we want to, so what could be Markov, so all randomness coming from the vertices, so we know all Markov processes on the finite set, so on the finite set we just seat exponential time, and when we move to the next state, so this is only possibility, so we just need to consider a mean time we have to do, and to consider mean time we just need to solve second order, we have to solve, so we consider a small, so we have a graph and we want to know how long we stay in this point, so we need to consider just take the small neighborhood and consider the exit from the neighborhood of the set, and this mean time is given by second order equation. Second order equation only involves with the derivative of a unknown function, so this is just linear differential equation for the derivative, and we can solve it. And like this is oscillatory solutions, we just analyze this oscillatory solutions, and so from this theorem, when analyze like what happens when delta goes to zero is just basically straightforward computations. So basically the main technical thing is to prove this result. And so what is we need to do for this limiting process, so we know what happens inside the edges of this process, so we need to explain what are the boundary conditions at the vertices. So well, there is one small reduction, so in principle the graph can be very complicated, so we don't want to work with a very complicated graph. We want to work with a graph which has only one accessible vertex, something like this. So we call this star-shaped graph, and this is just we can do by localization. So we consider, so suppose we start from this ergodic component, when we can consider the small neighborhood of this ergodic component, and when we can remove the complement and glue some small caps, so we just get here we start with genus 2 surface, we get a torus, and then we want to understand the process on the torus. Once it goes to here, we can consider a small neighborhood of this component. So basically, by considering appropriate stopping times, we just can assume that our process has a graph which has only one accessible surface. So, and we understand by classical averaging principle what is going to be the generator inside the edges. So the only thing which we need is to describe initial conditions on inside this vertex. And so let me just recall what are possible initial conditions for what are possible boundary conditions for the Markov process. So just let me first to motivate, let me, so diffusions with boundary conditions. So let me consider the first examples, and then I will state the general possible boundary conditions. So the most classical example is just we consider a usual random walk. Random walk just goes to every time the value of the walk increases by plus or minus, changes by plus or minus one, and these changes are independent, have a probability 1/2, and then the limiting process is the Brownian motion. So we know that the Brownian motion is a process which density is Gaussian, Gaussian density satisfies heat equation. So weak formulation of this, if we consider a suitable test function, we want to say that the expected increase of a function is given to expectation of the integral of the Laplacian of the Brownian motion. So in case of so it is not very difficult to see that in fact this is what happens. So we take, and this is happens for smooth test function u. So if we take smooth test function u, and we want to so let us call s n the increment, let us we call it delta n, and then we want to consider so u of s n plus 1 over square root of n. So we just use Taylor approximation, is u of s n over square root of n plus u prime of s n over square root of n times delta n plus 1/2 u double prime of s n over square root of n delta n. So there are some powers of, so we divide by square root of n, so here we have to put 1 over square root of n, we put 1 over n, and then we take square, and then we take expectation in the both parts, so we have expectation here, so then this term disappear because expectation of delta n is equal to zero, and so we have expectation here and expectation here. So this expectation is equal to one, so we have that expectation, incremental expectation is fact is proportional to expectation of Laplacian of R. So this is weak formulation or martingale formulation of diffusion process. So this is classical Brownian motion, there is no, all points are the same. So slightly more complicated system is skew-Brownian motion. Skew-Brownian motion, you modify transition probability at one point. So if you come to zero, then you go to the left with probability p, and to the right with you go to the right with probability p, and to the left with probability q. And so if you do so, then you can see the absolute value. So absolute value of this process is the same as the absolute value of random walk, because only changes it is zero. But if random walk is a zero, the absolute value becomes one next step in both cases. And also it's not very difficult to see by induction the probability that our random walk is on the right is p, and on the left is q. So it's just by induction of the number of digits to zero. So the limiting process has the same density as Brownian motion, except that it is multiplied by p at the right hand side and by q at the left hand side. I mean, p over 2, q over 2. So, and now we want to consider weak formulation. So again, the solution satisfies heat equation everywhere except zero. So to account of singularity at zero, we need to take test functions which have also singularity at zero. And basically, what is the difference here? We expect to visit zero about square root of n times, because we know that the number of visits by this modified process is the same as the Brownian motion. So we have here, if Sn is equal to zero, what will be the contribution? Here is going to be, we can go to the right, so with probability p, so we get p u, the derivative plus at zero, or we can get the probability to the left, and so we have q probability the left derivative at zero. So if the derivative have a jump, we want this to be equal to zero, so this is because this has one over square root of n, so we want to eliminate this term. We just need to assume that this happens. So this is kind of if we have this skew-Brownian motion is just Brownian motion on this graph with some special boundary conditions, and these boundary conditions which we have here are the jump of the first derivative is given by this form. And another example is the slowly reflecting Brownian motion. So again, now we consider the particle on the positive half axis, and again we have it behaves like random walk everywhere except zero. But if we come to zero, then we just stay at zero with probability which is close to one, but with small probability p over square root of n, we can go to one. And then if this is probability p over square root of n, so every time we come to zero, we stay about time square root of n at zero, and we have square root of n visits, so the total time has positive measure we spent at zero. So, and to take into account this, so what we know, every time we at zero, the contribution of this increment is going to be, we can get p over square root of n, and u prime of zero, and we have 1 over square root of n coming from here, so 1 over n, and we expect about n visits to zero, and contribution to the right hand side of this equation of visits to zero is going to be 1 half Laplacian of u of zero. And so to cancel, so we want to cancel this when we want, so again 1 over n here, so we want to cancel these contributions when the initial conditions which we need to consider are going to be this one, p u prime is equal to Laplacian of u at zero. So this is kind of how we can handle boundary conditions. Just when we consider this weak formulation, martingale formulation, we just want to consider functions which are not smooth but have certain types of singularities at the vertex. So in the general case, it was proven by failure in the case when we have just graph with two components, but and then friendly invention in case of general arbitrary number of components, that if we consider a process which does not die at zero, so it always escapes zero, then the most general boundary conditions which we have would be this one, the sum over all edges p u j, the derivative on the corresponding edge is equal to a times the generator of the process at zero. So this is the most general boundary conditions, and here is nice think that A is related to C. So we know that this process has an invariant measure, rho. This is the rho is invariant measure on the edge, so it satisfies this equation. L star of rho is equal to zero, and then if our process spends positive measure positive time at zero, then it has some it can also be Dirac mass at zero with some constant C, and then A is very easy to relate it to C because we want to have so we want to have L star L expectation or so expect integral of invariant measure of L U should be zero for any U allowable test function. So and this is basically going to be integral L U zero and plus L U plus C L U at zero. And now we want to integrate we want to use this condition here, so we want to integrate by parts. And when we integrate by parts, there is some boundary term, some A times times U prime, and this times the value of the density at the zero. So this constant C can be found. So if we know this C, then we can find A. So this P we can find just because it's kind of given. So in our problem, we need to find P and C. So we know that P are given by the separatrix integrals because it's probability basically that after small time, if we exit, we exit to the corresponding edge. But A, how we can find A? So first, suppose that we have a system that our process here preserves volume. The volume is invariant measure. So we know volume is area is invariant measure here, and we assume that area is also invariant by this generator here. Then we know the generator on the surface. We can project this invariant measure to the graph, and we obtain some invariant measure of this type, and so we can find we know C, and once we know C, we find A. So this is under assumption that this process preserves area. If it does not preserve area, so L does not preserve area, we can always write L as some W gradient, so say some vector field C times the gradient plus L so tilde, and L tilde is going to preserve area, and this one is going to be dissipative. And then basically what we want to say that so boundary conditions depend only on the behavior of the process close to the vertex. So inside the vertex we want basically to make one step of averaging and eliminate this term. And so therefore if we could, in principle this may be difficult to do if we don't make any assumptions on the vector field, because then this one method of one step of averaging requires change of coordinates, and this change may not be very smooth. But here, because we have this extra noise, then there is also Gersana formula which allows us to take care of this, because this Gersana formula basically says that we can assume that some part of Xi comes from basically noise, that noise can itself contribute some by accident contribute with Xi, so we can basically use it to eliminate Xi. So basically once we know that A is a function of Xi, then we can find uniquely the boundary conditions. So so now we know the notion among the H, and we know the boundary conditions, so the only thing which is left is to show that the limiting process is a Markov process. And so it's maybe kind of not obvious, because suppose, for example, you have a cross, and you can see the random walk on the cross, but you only have the second component of how much time I have? 5 minutes. I guess it's a couple of minutes. So if we consider random walk on the cross, and we consider only time with it, only the first component here, then if the walk comes to zero, and we see that it stays at zero for a long time, then it's probably, so for time m, then probably it went up to the distance square root of m, So we need to wait another time m until it comes back. And so, therefore, in this case, we limit, if we only consider the first component, when the limiting process is not going to be Markov. And it's so you can say, okay, this is kind of artificial example, but in fact, this example is very much related to our problem, because let us consider this example here. We have a torus, a flow on the torus, and here this is what I say, that this is going to be the graph of a system, but if you just look at this picture, it's not very clear whether this is true or not, because this is going to be the graph of a system if rotation number is irrational. If rotation number is rational, then of course all these trajectories here are going to be periodic, and so then the graph is not going to be this, but roughly is going to be something like this. And the size of this loop is going to be, roughly speaking, 1 over q, where q is the, so if rotation number is p over q. So in principle, if this system is has a rational rotation number, then exactly looks like locally as a random walk on the cross. So basically, we want to eliminate this possibility, and we have to use somehow this possibility, where we have to use this assumption that there are no saddle connections, because otherwise is going to be the result is not going to be true. And so what we want to do is we consider any component here, and we want to say that we quickly reach this component. So maybe here should be greater than delta, not greater. So if we fix any delta, then we, with probability close to one, we exit to each of this component with probability which tends to one as epsilon goes to zero. And once we know this, then the proof is this is very easy to complete the proof, because we just divide this graph into mesh of size epsilon, and we can basically use this kind of argument here. But to do this argument, in this case, when we come to the vertex, we need to show that to get the calculations from boundary terms, we need to know that we visit every edge many times before time, for arbitrary short time. So this is kind of what the statement is. If we want to this time very quickly exit from the neighborhood of this ergodic component. And in fact, there are some results. So this direction, so the first one is by Beristitsky, Hamelin, and Mendirashvili, and they say that if you have a manifold with boundary, then probability, and we consider some non-degenerate diffusion plus conservative drift, and we want, so and then again diffusion preserves a Lebesgue measure, and we want to know how long it takes to until we get to boundary, then if we have a strong drift, 1 over epsilon drift, then this time tends to zero, if and only if where we have this vector field V has no H1 eigenfunctions, which vanish on the boundary. So this is kind of a nice result, if you come, but in here is especially with part H1 eigenfunctions, because, for example, if you remember the classical averaging theorem, like Canossa theorem, when it assumptions, for example, there are no measurable eigenfunctions. And here we have much weaker assumptions that there are no smooth eigenfunctions. So this is kind of a nice result. And this result was improved by Zlatash using some, so the first different proof was given by Zlatash, Ryzhik, Kiselev, and Konstantin, and then Zlatash gave some improvement of this result. And so what is, just explain what is the difference between the results of Nadirashvili, Hamel, Beristitsky, and Zlatash. So suppose we have two boundary components, so something like this. Then the result of the first result says that if we fix these two boundary components, then we quickly exit to either this one or this one. But now what the theorem of Zlatash says, suppose we only want kill our process when we exit at this component. Then we consider probability that we don't, that tau is greater than delta as a function of x. So this function is going to be almost constant here, because here all H1 eigenfunctions of this vector field are going to be concentrated on this part. So, in fact, this is not ergodic, so we have constants. we have zero eigenvalues. And here there are no eigenfunctions, so the function is going to be constant here. This constant is going to be zero because function is assumed to be vanishing, but it does not need to be constant here. This is because if we start the process here on at the edge, it takes some time before it goes to zero, so it's, the result is not correct, but it is all is close to constant here. So, and this is exactly, I mean, it's more or less the result which we need. Slight technicality here, but here we assume that we start with invariant measure, whereas we need to start with the fixed point, and but basically this is kind of technical things which is not very difficult to get read. And so just the nice thing here, that if we apply to our, so this is exactly the result we need, and in fact we want need to check that there are no H1 eigenfunctions, that it was proven by Katok 1973, but if we want to ask if there are, so it is kind of H1 eigenfunctions, is kind of easy to get to rule out. If we want to ask if there are no measurable eigenfunctions, then it is not known. I think it was proven in some, there are some partial results which say that for almost all rotation number there are no measurable eigenfunctions, but it's not known in general if there are no. But in this case we just need H1 eigenfunction, which is very easy to rule out, and so this allows us to finish the proof.